Hi, this is Ken McCarthy, and welcome to a very special edition of the System Club Mastermind class or event. We do this for our System Club members, but this was such an important event that I wanted to talk about it for everybody. If somebody were to ask me what the biggest problem that business owners and entrepreneurs face in the area of marketing, I would say that it is putting the cart before the horse. In our world, that's putting internet tools and gizmos and fads and techniques ahead of sound marketing principles. If you get your marketing thinking straight, then all those tools become very useful. If you don't have your marketing thinking straight, those tools become a swamp from which you may never emerge. So my whole life, I've always been searching for people who have deep experience in marketing, especially direct marketing, direct response advertising, because that really is the model for what we do on the internet if you want to be successful. And there really aren't a lot of people that have profound experience in this area. There are people that have good experience and solid experience, but you can count really on the fingers of one hand people whose experience I would put in the profound category. Several years ago, our good friend Gary Bensavenga put on a seminar, 2 days. It was the only seminar he ever did. He's somebody that I would put in the category of profound. Everybody that writes copy acknowledges that Gary's one of the best who ever lived and ever practiced. So when that seminar became available, I didn't have to think twice about going to it. And today, we're talking with another individual who has a similar depth of background. And he is putting on an event. We're going to talk about it a little bit later, but if you have a calendar, it's June 28th, 29th. And it's something that if you're serious about advancing your business, if you're serious about digging a very deep and solid foundation for your business for it to grow, this is something that you're going to really want to think about participating in. So with no more further ado, let me introduce Drayton Bird. Welcome, Drayton.
Hi, Ken.
Hey, now, a lot of people in the U.S., you know, we're U.S.-centric, so we're very aware of all of the U.S. marketing superstars. Of course, there's great marketing talent all over the world. And, Drayton, you're based in England.
Yeah, I'm based in England, but I've actually worked in 54 countries all over the place.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about that. I'm going to give a brief history, and then I'm going to ask Drayton to fill in some of the details. But Drayton was one of the pioneers of direct response advertising in England, and he and his colleagues created an agency that was very successful. So successful, in fact, that when David Ogilvy wanted to enter the UK market, he made the calculation that it was easier to just simply buy Drayton's agency, and that's what he did. And then Drayton became one of the officers of that worldwide enterprise that Ogilvy created. And one of Ogilvy's goals was to basically preach the gospel of direct marketing to all his far-flung outposts. And one of Drayton's jobs with Ogilvy was to go around the country and teach direct marketing principles around the world. So there just aren't many people that have this kind of pedigree when it comes to direct marketing. And then for many, many years, he has run his own shop, working with clients large and small, corporate and entrepreneurial, and continues to do so to this day. We were talking before the recording started, and Drayton writes copy, he says, 5, sometimes 6 days a week. So when we're talking with Drayton, we're talking with somebody who has pretty profound experience that is absolutely up to date. And he is doing an event in England, in the UK, in late June, the dates being June 28th and 29th. And this is a very unusual circumstance. He has for years put on a conference on European direct marketing, and he's had speakers come in, and I've been to at least one of them, and they're excellent. They're really excellent. But this is going to be just Drayton. And so, you know, a few colleagues maybe will chime in with some commentary. But this is Drayton for 2 straight days. And this is a once-in-a-lifetime thing. It's, you know, it's not something he's done before, and it's definitely something he's not going to be repeating. So I want to start this, before we even get into the interview, by saying if you are looking to get true depth in your business, you're not going to be able to find many other people who are going to be able to give you a doorway to that. So, Drayton, I think one of the interesting things about your background and that you talk about a lot is that you grew up above a pub, and I wonder how that influenced your approach to sales and marketing and business and just human relations in general.
There's a very interesting thing about that. I think one of the great ingredients, if you wish to sell people things, is charm. David Ogilvy actually took me out to dinner in Claridge's in London once, and he said to me, "Do you know the secret of success in this business, right?" And I said, "No, David." He said, "Charm."
Charm.
And my father and mother, my mother was very beautiful. My father was extremely entertaining. And their pub did bloody well because people came from miles and miles and miles because they were very good company. And I think if you want to sell things to people, well, they did the old salesman, so you've got to sell yourself. You've got to have charm. As Ogilvy said, you cannot bore people into buying. There is a big relationship between the two. And funnily enough, in the last month, I've actually bought a large share in a restaurant down here. So I'm going back to my roots. I'm not going to do any work there because I'd ruin the place. But it's a very useful. I did a tour for American Express called Catering for Express years ago. Catering for Success years ago. And I used to say to the audience, "You're probably wondering why I'm standing here getting paid and you're sitting down there paying." And I'll tell you the reason. The reason is because I'm not good enough to do what you do. And they all used to look at me. And I don't mind being screwed around for a few $1,000s. But not for a few, not for tens of pounds. So it's hard work. And it's very good training, because you have to get people to like you. You have to be, because obviously repeat sales with this is everything else. Well, important. Yeah. Very good comparison, Ken.
I'd like to talk now about how you got into direct response because, direct response, even though it has been around for, over 100 years, certainly with the Sears catalog and all of that, it is an ever evolving art and it wasn't practiced as extensively as it's practiced today. And there has been a big growth in it in the last many decades. So when you started, it wasn't the obvious path to go on. So can you talk about how you even found it? I mean, in a way, direct response was almost like internet marketing is today. In other words, it was somewhat newish, even though it was based on old principles. Not a lot of people understood it. Not a lot of people trusted it. Maybe you can talk about how you discovered it and why you thought that it was worth your time.
Well, the reason for this was very simple. My first copywriting job, I soon noticed that there were two different kinds of clients. The ones where you had to persuade the client that something was good, if they liked it. I handled a very big soap account, the toilet soap, the number one brand, when I was about 25, in Manchester, which is where I come from. Well, I was born in Liverpool. And the way that the advertising was sold was I would sit in a chair and opposite me would sit the marketing, the advertising director, who was a lady, and I would read my copy, and if she liked it, it would run, and if she didn't like it, it wouldn't bloody well run. And that was a very frustrating experience for me. But I had other clients, as it happened, who relied for their success upon measurable sales. They were selling, maybe there was some were selling things door to door, some were selling things through the post, but the results were all that mattered. And when I got, after a while, I got a very, when I was very young, actually, I got a job as a creative director in an agency in London. And by that time, I'd started to really think carefully about this difference between the people who ran the ads that their wives liked and the people that had to, we sell or out, as David Ogilvy used to put it, no sell, no eat. And when I got this creative director's job, it so happened that the accounts that I had, which were included the British Tourist Office, the Greek National Tourist Board, people selling washing machines direct, they all depended for their success on measurable results or they went broke. Mm-hmm. And I started to introduce to other clients, telling them to put coupons in their ads. So I was a bit of an evangelist, really. And then I got a job. Somebody asked me to go in and help them sell something, which is a bodybuilding product called the Bullworker, which sold all over the world. And I've met many copywriters, many quite well-known people in the direct marketing business and the sales business who bought the Bulwarker to get big and strong. Well, I'm the guy you can blame if you bought one. So that was in the 1960s. Didn't work for me.
Wait a minute. I don't want to derail you from this, but you still. Last time I talked with you, you were still working out on the Bulwarker. Is that true?
I use the same exercise principles. I do about 1,000 repetitions of one kind or another each week, and I walk a lot. But the Bulwarker principles are really, you know, there's nothing new about them. You don't actually need a Bulwarker, to be honest. It's pressure. It's pressure against pressure, you know, that causes it.
And I do want to point out, because it is interesting, how old are you right now?
80.
80. All right. So you know, we didn't start out with that, but everybody should put this in their calculations. Trayton's 80. He's still working out. He's fitter than I am, though I actually am improving in that area. But I haven't caught up with him yet. Though, frankly, it is an aspiration. I don't know if you knew this, but it is one of my life's goals, to be as fit as Drayton Bird. Working every day, clients, teaching, consulting, just file that away. So in the back of your mind, so when we're talking about experience, we're not talking about, you know, he did a few interesting things 10 years ago. So you worked on the bull worker? Is that what it was called?
Yeah.
The bull? Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember those ads, by the way. Those ads.
I don't know if it's Clayton Makepeace, but somebody else I spoke to recently said, "I bought that thing," you know.
Yeah. It had a lot of there were a lot of space ads for it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I wrote the ads. I wrote the ad. The headline that did it was Britain's heavyweight weightlifting champion 1962, 63, 64 reveals, and then the big headline was how these seven exercises can build you a power pack body in exactly 47 seconds or 49 seconds a day, or all your money back instantly without question. How about that? Right, it did well in Japan.
I bet it did. I've seen so many variations on that headline over the years too. In fact, you know, maybe this was an unconscious source. I never thought of this before. But my original headline for the system seminar was "Internet Marketing Pioneer Reveals the Existence of a Secret Internet Underground." Blah 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 blah. That's a great formula, by the way, for people listening. The idea of somebody coming stepping forward and revealing the secret.
Well, there are so many hidden currents in people's minds, that things that people believe in, that everybody believes there is a secret. Everybody believes it can be done quickly or easily. And the more precisely you can put it into, you know, 47 seconds, the more precisely you can make it. And you don't have to worry about that. But people sort of say, oh, well, you shouldn't run long headlines. I remember when I was with Ogilvy, we did some research and we found out that headlines, the longer the headline, pretty much, the better it would do, because the longer the headline, the more precise the promise you can make.
Right.
Go
ahead, please.
Yeah.
And if you think about the precision in that headline, maybe you could say it one more time, because actually there's a whole course just in that headline.
Yeah, it was Britain's heavyweight weightlifting champion, 1962, 63, 64. If you missed out those dates, that makes it less credible, yeah?
Sure.
And the guy, incidentally, by the way, the guy that was the weightlifting champion, he was the guy who was in Darth Vader. He was in the Darth Vader suit, but his voice didn't work very well, so they got someone else to do the voice. And then the main headline was these seven exercises. And if you miss out the word "these," it won't work as well. Mm-hmm. if you want to say seven exercises, you know, a precise number, you know, will build your power pack body in exactly so many seconds a day, all your money back instantly add sales to you without question. That every single thing in a really good ad should be like the inside of an old watch, you know, of it going, everything going click, 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 click. And making the whole thing work.
Yep, and you essentially told an entire story in that headline that there was this guy and he won the championship and he used this technique and now he's going to reveal it to you and you can do it in so many seconds and if it doesn't work, I mean, it's the whole beginning, middle, and end of a narrative.
The thing is, it has that one element that people have to say to themselves, how? So
right.
They keep reading.
Right.
Actually,
right.
It's funny you're talking about the evolution of direct response. I was doing some videos today, and I sort of had lunch with somebody yesterday who showed me two advertisements. And I'm still very curious about things. I still like to learn. And one of them is an advertisement from 1912, and it shows two guys in front of a car, and the headline is, they started even. They worked side by side in the same shop. One was ambitious, grasped the opportunity, succeeded. He succeeded. He studied chiropractic. He is now independent. And then the other fellow didn't do very well. Well, this is the same ad that the two guys that everyone copies that was done for the Wall Street Journal. And I've seen another version that dates back to the 19th century. See, the big problem with people in marketing, today and in just about everything, is ignorance of the past, just ignorance. And this problem is compounded by the extraordinary volume of material being put out over the internet, so that they don't understand basic principles, and then they are flooded, they are inundated, they are assaulted, they are attacked every day with people promising this, promising that, promising the other, I'll make you rich, I'll do this and that. But unless you're grounded, unless you understand these principles, you won't do well. I've got another ad this guy showed me. This says, this is from 1917, exactly 100 years ago. Why $5,000 salaries are common in this new $2 billion industry? Written by a guy called Max Sakine, who wrote a very good book called... Yeah, yeah. And you read this ad, and if you understand the principles of marketing, the principles of persuasion, the principles of communication, then you know why this is a great ad, and you realize that, no, it didn't happen last week when somebody came out with a new hack or whatever it was, yeah? It's been around. It was around before then.
And the principles in that ad that's 100 years old, if somebody takes the time to deconstruct it and grasp what he's doing, could then be applied to something they're selling right now today.
It is being applied all the time. I mean, the one with the two guys, that's being applied. There are people running ads today, running emails, running communications, and that's the other thing that really amuses me, because I've worked in every medium you can think of, you know, television, blah, blah, whatever, yeah?
Yeah.
The principles don't change. The medium, people's heads do not rotate in a different direction when they sit in front of a screen. They are the same people. They have the same loves, the same hates, the same fears. I was talking today, I was doing some videos about one particular firm in the investment field who have been running essentially the same message with variations for as long as I can remember. And this message is very simple. It says, the world is coming to an end. It's all going to happen. Blah, blah. There are going to be riots in the streets, blood in the gutters, blah, blah, blah. But if you act now, you could get rich. And they just say the same thing all the time. Yeah.
There's nothing new about it.
Yeah?
There's thousands of people making a living with that approach right now in the investment arena.
Yeah. Well, it's what people's fears generally are more important than what their hopes, unfortunately, particularly now.
Yeah, fears, insecurities, feeling vulnerabilities that they want to cover. Yeah, no, it's true. It's some of it's aspirational, but some of it is defensive. So the bull worker. Tell me about how that. So that you were the person that started the direct response on that.
Well, no, I didn't. What happened was that I was the creative director of this agency, and I wrote a memo to the chairman, and I said, you've got to put me on the board because you don't have a copyright on the board, and I've done some study in the 20, 18 of the top 25 agencies of the world are run by ex-copywriters. And he took me out to lunch and said, oh, dad, calm down, you know, be a bit more patient. And I thought, screw this. And at the same time, somebody came along to me and said, hey, will you come? Can you come and have lunch? We've got something we want to show you. And so I went to have lunch, and they showed it to me, and they said, do you think you could sell it? And I said, yeah. I said, what are you doing now? And they showed me what they were doing. And I said, show me the figures. And they showed me the figures. And I said, I said, all right, I could sell 1,000 a week of these. And they said, really? And I said, yeah. I said, if what you told me is true. Of course, I was very cocky then. I was, you know, 28. And they said, if you can sell 20,000, you know, we'll give you 20% of the business. So I said, all right, then. And this was in October. By May, they were selling 1,000 a week. And in September, they realized they got all their numbers wrong. And they went broke. That was one of the first of the several occasions on which I failed to make a lot of money.
Oh, they didn't manage the business well.
No. I mean, one of my great advantages to anyone talking is that I've screwed up more things than you've had hot dinners. I went broke. Oh, God, did I go over. I either failed or went broke several times. And it was only really when I sort of sat down and thought, is there anything I'm actually any good at? I thought, I still understand. I understand the agency business, and that direct marketing was suddenly coming up. And I started with two partners, but I owed so much money to the Inland Revenue, the IRS, I think, that I was living under a false name. I couldn't, you know, so I owed them all the money. And it wasn't until we started making money, I sort of came out from under my cover and said, here I am.
Wow.
And the taxman came after me. And then we started out, all of us, none of us had any money. We were all in debt. And 3.5 years later, we were the biggest direct agency in England. And then we started in 77, 84, David rang me. And we sold in 85. And then they said, oh, will you be the creative, worldwide creative whatever? And then I had these three jobs, which was hard work, I can tell you. But I had these three jobs. Number one, I was the worldwide creative director. And number two, I was in charge of going around doing speeches to clients, you know, and educating our clients, people like American Express and so on. And number three, I was in charge of finding good people and making their, this is very important if you're running a business, yeah?
Uh-huh.
Finding good people and trying to make sure that they succeeded. And I was good at that. I have to say, I was good at that. You know, I mean, there's one guy that worked, started out with an art director with me, and in the last 10 years, he was 5 years on the trot. He was voted the top creative director in Asia, which is a pretty big place, by the way.
I would say.
So there are quite a few. There's a guy that I'm going to see when I go to Australia in a few months. He started out with me at 19 as a copywriter, and he now runs a thing called Drogba 5 in Australia. Very, very successful. There's an awful lot of them.
So that was recruiting brand new people into the agency.
I would find people, or there's one guy I was talking to the other day who's now retired, unlike me, but I saw him in New Zealand, and he didn't want to stay in New Zealand. He wanted to go somewhere outside. And I would see people I thought were good, you know, and I sort of moved him, I think, to South Africa, and then he went to Thailand. So unless you think you're so bloody brilliant, or you want to work yourself to death, that you can do everything yourself, then the most important thing is to find. I did a talk. Here's a, try and explain to you what I used to do. I did a talk in Frankfurt, and I started by putting up an advertisement from 1923 from an advertising agency in America. And the headline was, there is only one solution to every advertising problem. And then the main headline, find the man.
Mm-hmm.
And I looked at our managers from around the world, and I said, tell me, do you think you know what is going through the heads of your people? Do you think you know what their hopes are, what their dreams are, what their fears are? Do you ever wonder? And they all looked at me, and I said, I'll play you a video. And I played them a video of a young guy who joined me, who went to work to, I think, New Zealand to be a former creative director. And I just said to him, hey, you know, just tell me, do a quick video telling me of all about your ambitions and dreams and what you're worried about. So he did. His name was Andy Firth, and I hired him from an art college in Newcastle originally. Mm-hmm. And he did that, and I turned to all the people. I said, if you don't know what's going through your people's heads, you can't succeed. They are going to make it happen for you. You think you can do it yourself? You're all full of shit, yeah?
Mm.
This is people, you know. It's a combination of, do you know what you're doing? Do you understand the principles of what you're doing? Do you understand the minutiae of things that can go wrong? Do you understand the people? Because it's all, you're only, there's only one. There was a guy, you know, the guy who saved Chrysler from going broke a few years ago. He wrote a book. At one time he was so popular they thought he'd run for president. But I remember he said something. He said, if you want to succeed around here, you better get on with people. He said, because that's all we've got. That's all we've got. You see, and it doesn't matter whether I'm talking about motivating people as individuals or motivating people en masse through communication. You have to know what's in men's hearts and women's hearts and what they hope for and what they dream of. And then you've got to make it precise and you've got to care about it. And you've got to transmit that the way that you care in every respect, you know, to the people who work with you, to the people you want to sell to, the people you want to buy from, whatever, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's all about emotion. And then after that comes the logic, which explains why the emotional decisions that people are making anyhow. You know what I mean?
It's interesting. This is very important because, you know, you're so correct that if you want to do something big, you're going to have to involve people and probably a lot of people. And the idea of recruiting somebody and making sure they succeed, I'm afraid to say that is not in the minds of a lot of people who hire people. They need someone to do something, and that's as far as it goes. And this, Katrina just gave us an extremely valuable lesson in how you build a team. That's a big phrase these days, team building, and people have retreats.
I hate the word. People talk about it. The one thing I hate, for instance, is, you see, there are little practical things that drive me crazy. I get these things signed by the team.
Mm-hmm.
Who do you get? Hello, team.
I know.
We don't deal with a bloody team. I said, if you want to running a football match, fine, you know. But if you're running a business, it's people. You know, people relate to people. Individuals relate to individuals. You know, there are so many. To me, although a lot of what I've learned has been to do with technique, it's these underlying truths that are important. And then you take some underlying truth and then you relate it to the process. So let's take the process. Somebody runs an email and at the bottom it says the team. So what's the process? The process is you want somebody to respond. So who do I ring? Hello, team. Yeah? It's going to work better if it's somebody's name.
Right.
You know, in the old, the big accounts I used to deal with, you know, the big consumer accounts, you know, you do a big agonizing. You know, what is going to be the name of the person who's going to sign the letter? Or, you know, we would argue about it. I remember for one client, we found a name that didn't sound male and didn't sound female. Because we were, that mattered, yeah,
uh-huh.
To the customers. Yeah? The Duke of Wellington was quite a funny man, and he was once asked by somebody, pray tell me, Your Grace, to what do you owe your victories? And the Duke replied, nothing about strategy, which is a word which is so overused it's unbelievable, nothing about tactics. He just said, attention to detail. So I think it's that. Good people, I don't think I'm particularly brilliant. I've just made a lot of mistakes. But good people pay attention to these details whilst at the same time they have a broad picture. There's one client I'm talking to at the moment, and I can see they're going to have trouble. And they're going to have trouble because they are unwilling to let go. I'm trying to get a brief out of them. And I've got 5 questions I've asked them. Because I think the briefing process is the most important process probably in creative. You know, if it goes wrong, it's because the brief was no good. No. So I've got five simple questions, and they can't answer them.
Oh, sorry to interrupt, but that may be an Englishism that Americans may not be familiar with. What do you mean by a brief?
The brief is, this is what we want. So I have a thing called the general briefing template, and it asks a whole series of questions. It says questions like, who is your ideal prospect? Have you communicated with these people before? If so, what did they do? Can you show us what works and what didn't work? It's about 32 questions. And at the end, when they've answered those 32 questions, you know as much as you can possibly know about the challenge for that communication. Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
It's your understanding. I mean, where does the money come from? It comes from the customer. Therefore, you have to know as much about the customer as you possibly can. And you have to know as much if it's not a new product, assuming it's an existing product. You need to know as much as conceivably possible about what they've done in the past, what's worked, what hasn't worked, why they think it worked. And you ask them questions like, you know, have you tried, can you show us stuff that you've done and what works and what didn't? Can you tell us why you think it didn't work? What are the biggest problems you think you face? You can never be the client. You can't be the client, but you have to be as close as you possibly can be to the client and understand the client's experiences to be able to come up with the, you know, what it's all about. And these, the people I'm talking about, this particular client, they're very unwilling to let anybody brief me, yeah? But they're very busy. What's happening? These tiny little things that go wrong. What's happening is that the job is getting delayed and delayed and delayed, yet they say they're in a hurry, you know? It's a funny old world.
And it's interesting. I think it's the same client you were talking about with me before. You were brought in initially to write copy, and of course you're certainly capable of doing that, but you needed to start at a different level before you felt you could go ahead and help them. And their challenge, this is something that a lot of people on this call might be able to relate to, is they're growing very fast, and which can sometimes happen. And that can be, strangely enough, that can be the road to ruin if it's not managed correctly.
Oh yeah. I mean, the growth is a terrible problem. Another problem, I've done a lot of work with business schools, and another problem which is very, very high at the moment, mergers and acquisitions. A lot of the higher level of mergers and acquisitions right now than there has been for about 12 years. And mergers and acquisitions, it's like two different blood groups joining each other. So I remember what you said was not strictly accurate about David in England. They had an agency in England, but it was no good.
Okay.
And so I was brought in to put the two agencies together. Within 18 months, there were only two people left of their agency. Because the blood groups were wrong, you know, they didn't think the same way as we did, which is why they were no good. I mean, I always remember the guy, the creative director, he used to sit in his office and with the door closed. Well, David came to see me one day and he said, "Can we? I want to talk to you about something." He said, "Can we sit in your office?" I said, "I don't have an office, David." He said, "No." I said, "The only person who's got an office here is the financial director because he's got secrets." But nobody else had an office. I mean, I had a somewhat eccentric approach to management. He came in one day and he said, "By the way," he said, "what exactly do you do, Drake?" He said, "You're not the chairman, you're not the managing director, and you're not the creative director." So I said, "I'm in charge of entertainment, David." He said, "What do you mean?" I said, "My job is to make people come in early and leave late and enjoy the intervening period as much as possible."
Interesting. Now related to this and related to this client, you mentioned to me before we started recording that one of the things you counseled them to do is make sure that all of their staff knew what was going on. In other words, you know, what business are we in? How do we make money? What are we trying to accomplish? And this is such a simple idea, and yet I wonder how many people have employees or vendors who they haven't bothered to educate. And what is the impact of not educating people on that?
Well, I think the two most important things, I did some stuff last week. about a pub in England. Not a pub, it's a chain of pubs. They're called Wetherspoons. And pubs in England are closing down, 21 a week at the moment, yeah?
Wow.
For reasons I won't bore you with. But this chain is growing all the time. And the reason it's growing all the time is that this guy has a very clear perception of what he wants to do. A lot of people don't. A lot of people say, I'd like to make lots of money in such and such a business. But he's very clear about, first of all, he's going to undercut everybody. See, underprices everyone else, you know. And if you go into his pubs, he is aware of the history of the pub. Pubs were traditionally the centerpiece of the local community. So if you go into a J.D. Wetherspoon pub, and there's one round the corner from me here in Bristol, you will see it's got stuff about, very interesting stuff about Bristol, yeah? If you go to any of his pubs anywhere in the country, you will find interesting stuff about that particular area. So he's got this, he's got a positioning, and furthermore, he thinks about things that other people don't. If you want to succeed, you will do better than your competition if you think of things they don't. And somebody once interviewed Tim Miller, Tim Martin, who started Wetherspoon, and asked him how he'd succeeded. And one of the things he said, the toilets. He said, we pay a lot of attention to the toilets. Yeah? So you see, if you want to become more than just an also-ran, one of so many, yeah, then you've got to think differently to other people. Yeah? And you've got to think about things that other people don't think about. But when it comes to going back to what you're asking about these people I was talking to you about, I went up to see them because they said they wanted to meet me. I didn't know why they wanted to meet me, but I thought, you know, I was born in Liverpool. They're in Liverpool, so I'd go up to Liverpool. I went up to Liverpool, met them, very nice guys. And I thought they wanted coffee, and they seemed to want advice on their business, which I can give based on ruining quite a few of my own.
Uh-huh.
And I talked to them for a bit, and I said, they're doing this and doing that. And I said, look, I said, I don't know your business, guys, but I can tell you one thing, that unless you get a very clear idea in your heads of what you think you're doing, you won't be able to tell everyone else what you think you're doing. And if your business grows as fast as it is growing, you're going to end up with a lot of people who don't know what you're doing, and they won't know what they're doing, and you're going to be in shit. So, I make my living, I suppose, by writing copy mostly, yeah? And I have done all my life. But I'm much more interested in, I don't think it's good enough just to be a writing copy, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Ogilvy was very interesting, for instance. Ogilvy had very, very strong views and had given great thought to the nature of the business he had and the kind of people that he wanted to employ. And I think we got on quite well, because he was quite an intimidating. If he didn't like you, you'd bloody know it, I believe me. You know? Mm-hmm. I saw him demolish people. He gave great thought to these things, and he wanted people that fitted in with, you know, what the kind of business he wanted. And one of the things that he was obsessed with was, you know, advertising that sold. And I think that's one of the reasons why we got on quite well. I was very surprised that we got on quite well, to be honest. I think I wasn't frightened of him. I can remember the first meeting I had with him after we bought the agency was in our agency in Amsterdam. It was a meeting of the local, of all the managers from around Europe. And I arrived late. I'm totally clueless at getting from A to B, so I went to the wrong building. And then I arrived late, sweating profusely, and I used to wear cologne. And I came in, and he was sitting on a sort of settee. And he said, come and sit down here. I said, I'm sorry, I'm late. He said, that's all right. And I sat down. He said, my God, he said, what's that? He said, you smell like a whore's boudoir. So I said, how do you know, David? So you used to have some hilarious exchanges, quite a few.
What would you
it's
say?
Very interesting to meet somebody good, you know, and study them.
Absolutely. And it goes back to something I was saying at the very beginning of this, is there's a lot of, you know, good, decent producers out there, but there really was only one David Ogilvy, and there's really just a handful of people who have done, you know, truly remarkable things over a long span of time. Anybody can get lucky, you know, take a shot and hit it, and it seems amazing. But to do that repeatedly over many years, that's technique. What would you say were some of the things that besides what you've already described, the emphasis, the importance of charm, that you learned from Ogilvy while working with him?
He was incredibly hardworking.
Mm-hmm.
There's a guy that I became very friendly with called Joel Rafelson, who used to live in Chicago. And I went to see Joel. And when David wrote Ogilvy in Advertising, he sent a draft of the book to Joel, and he's with a little note saying, "Hi, Joel, I'm just saying, Joel, kindly improve David."
Uh-huh.
And I was sitting in a restaurant in Chicago, and I'm very curious. I think if you want to succeed, you've got to be curious. You've got to be curious. You know, lack of curiosity leads to lack of knowledge. So I said, you know, you worked with David for a long time. I said, well, you know, I was always looking for stories about him, and I got a great many. And he said, when he was in Chicago, I remember I would go, I'm quite hard working. He said, I would go on a Saturday morning and do a few things and blah, blah, blah. And David would be there. And then I would leave, and then I would drive past there on Sunday night, and the light would be burning. He would still be there.
Mm-hmm.
He was very, very hardworking.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very hardworking. He believed in repeating the same message repeatedly. If you look at his speeches and so on, it's a pretty narrow range of subjects. He was extremely cultured, very good library, and had very nice paintings in the chateau. He was intolerant, impatient of fools. He was prepared to take great risks. When he was younger, he would take a... If he thought he got a chance of getting an account, he would get on the plane and get there.
Yeah, he was
also very good looking when he was young, which that helps.
What can people do who aren't good looking? No, seriously. So from this experience at Ogilvy, you were also involved in teaching direct marketing, I think, to the different agencies. Is that correct, or do I have that wrong?
God, I've taught direct marketing, God knows. I mean, I used to go around to the Ogilvy agencies, but I also taught other agencies, Gray, J. Walter Thompson, quite a few of them. I've lost count of how many people I've taught, and also clients. So for Procter & Gamble, I got some business from Procter. I taught Procter & Gamble in Switzerland, and somebody approached me at Christmas, and they said, "Oh, we'd like to see you." And I said, "Why?" They said, "Well, we remember seeing you at Procter & Gamble in 1989. We thought you were pretty good."
Wow.
So I quite like teaching, actually, because I think that if you want to be a good teacher, you have to be a good learner. So you have a lot of people, the majority, I would say, who have their set speech or variations on it, which they give all the time. And I won't mention any others. Some very, very famous people give the same speech time after time after time. They don't develop. I very, very rarely give the same talk twice. I never know if I'm doing a talk, or say if I'm doing a speech, for instance, before I do the speech, I will have four or five different things in the back of my mind that I might start with. And I won't decide which one I'm going to start with until I actually stand up. And always vary it according to who the audience is. You know, I mean, I would not do the same. I used to do training for American Express. So I would do totally different training for American Express as I did have to, after I'd left Ogilvy. Visa approached me and said, "Would I go and do some training for them?" And I was in somewhere in the Midlands in this country, and I stood up and I said, "Well, it's very interesting to talk to you guys. I said, I just spent the last 8 years trying to kill you." So I said, "Well, I'll talk to you about Visa from the point of view of American Express." So that one of the great things that I've enjoyed, and I must have been, I still enjoy, is if somebody comes along to me with something I know absolutely nothing about, then I have to learn about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very good for me. And often, you know, I discover things I didn't know. I'm what they call a snapper up of unconsidered trifles.
Yeah. Well, it's all part of the curiosity gene.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people carve out an area for themselves, and if it's not in, quote, in their area, they think it's, quote, irrelevant. And I rarely come across anything that's irrelevant. It's always useful in some way.
Yeah.
You know, especially if you're dealing with people, you can never learn too many things or hear too many stories or observe many interactions.
Yeah.
Well, so just to sort of recap for our listeners, you know, Drayton is a copywriter, and we talked a little bit about that. If you study that headline that he gave us earlier in the call, you realize that one headline alone could be gold for you. He's also talked about the fact that if you're stuck and you can't come up with a headline, shame on you, because there are hundreds of amazing proven headlines in the history of direct response. You can go to them for free on the internet and immerse yourself in them and find elements that you can use for your own offer. He's also talked about a topic that doesn't come up too often in entrepreneurial circles, but it really needs to, which is how are you going to assemble the right people around you to get what you want done? Because as he rightly points out, there's no way, you know, unless you're, you know, going to be a solo practitioner and just a writer, and that's fine, of course. But if you want to do something substantial, you're going to need people, and you're going to need talented people. And he's talked about how to find them and how to work with them, I think, in very important ways. And I thought the thing that you said, make sure that your hires succeed. How many employers ever give a thought to that? They're just trying to find a body to fill a seat to get a job done. The idea of thinking about the person and discovering what their goals are and making sure that the being part of the enterprise is part of their goal, that's a big secret right there. Well, we've talked about the dangers of growth, which I can tell you have blown up many internet entrepreneurs. They thought everything was dandy, and then they discovered they couldn't handle the growth they generated. And you talked about how to anticipate that problem and how to head it off. And you talked about teaching and the fact that you've taught all over the world for many, many years and to many, you know, high-level practitioners, including me, by the way. Some people, I'll just tell this story really quick, but one of the big life-changing events for me as a direct marketer was to discover Drayton's book, Common Sense. Then it was called just Common Sense Direct Marketing. And it took complex ideas that I was grasping intellectually from other sources but felt a little intimidated by. It took that same information and humanized it, I guess, and made it understandable and approachable. And I finished the book with the feeling that, wow, I can actually do this. So now you're coming up in June. You're doing it's a rare event, rare by definition. You're only going to do it once. You're going to spend 2 days with a group of lucky people who are serious about advertising, serious about marketing, serious about business building, serious about managing a business and making sure it stays on the rails and achieves all that it can. And tell me about this event and what should people expect who are going to it?
Well, it's going to be a lot of the stuff I've talked about today, to be honest, is not what it's going to be about. What it's going to be about is about stuff that gets results.
Mm-hmm.
But what I'm going to do is I'm going to take it from some subjects which people talk a lot about but don't understand and which are rather broad and important, such as branding and positioning, down to the tiny detail of how you actually get more people to give you more money.
Uh-huh.
And mostly, I believe that one example is worth a ton of bullshit. So there will be literally hundreds of examples from every possible field. I will take individual pieces, mailings in particular, and advertisements in particular, and explain why they work and how they work. And I'll also, there's a guy called Bob Bly, you must know Bob, well you
of
do
course,
know Bob.
Yeah.
I've known him for many, many years, but not very well, but we communicate quite a lot. And I wrote a book called How to Write a Sales Letter That Sells, which Bob thinks is the best thing ever written on the subject. And I've done a new version of that, which includes emails. And everyone's going to get a numbered copy of that book. All the attendees will get a numbered autographed copy of that book. I think it's quite a good book. But more importantly, people get a little bit confused by when they're in a different medium. They sort of think, oh, this is direct mail. That's not the same as advertisements. This is not the same as emails. And I think a lot of people are very confused about emails. I definitely write 4 or 5 emails a week. And I'm going to talk about that quite a lot. So I'm going to talk about the individual media. I'm going to talk about the strategies, which, I mean, real strategies, not the word strategy, which is often applied to very simple things, but real strategies about how you differentiate your business. But most of all, with lots and lots of examples you can look at and, you know, and think about and learn from. The truth of the matter is, Ken, that if you go to any event, this is what always amuses me, but people go to events and then they come back from home or wherever and they'll get asked a question that runs along like, what was it like? And the reply will be, oh, it was great, he was funny, or he was boring, or she was so-and-so, this, that, and the other. Very few people ask the most important question, which I would like everybody who attends this event to be able to answer very profitably. And that question is, what are you going to do differently tomorrow? Okay? So the aim of the exercise is, A, you should come and be highly entertained. The one claim I will make is I'm quite entertaining. And there's a guy I'm doing it with, Trevor Toecracker Crook, who's, if anything, even more entertaining than I am. And he's going to make a contribution. He's a very funny guy, but very clever. It's all going to be about practical stuff that you can do, you know, and that's going to make a difference. Not this, hey, it was a great day, they made me laugh, or she was good looking, whatever, yeah? Mm-hmm. It's going to be practical. That's the most important thing. It's going to give you stuff that you can take away and do something with. And you don't have to do a lot. You've only got to go say, as far as I'm concerned, I've got the rule of three. I say, if you can come away with three things, that significant things, that you're going to do differently, then your investment has been a bloody good investment, yeah? And actually, if you don't come away with three things that you're going to do differently and better, then either you're perfect already, or you weren't bloody well paying attention.
or you're thick as a brick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so I would say to anybody who, clearly if you have a business, your business depends on good inputs, good advice. I'm coming to realize somewhat late in the game that you don't necessarily need to be the most creative person who ever lived, but you certainly need to know and be receptive to a lot of creative people, because you can get some amazing ideas from others. And it's always good to have a thorough review of the fundamentals. In fact, there was a great comment made by Greg Ranker, who's part of Gunty.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. You know, he's not deficient in any way. You know, he's got 1,000 employees. They're making literally over $1 billion a year in sales. They've been going at it for years. They're continuing to thrive. And he said, we should all spend an hour a day reminding ourselves of the fundamentals. And I cannot agree more. And it's kind of, you know, not necessarily easy to do that. It's easier to get swept up in minutia. And what I like about seminar events is that you can go away, get away from all the distractions, phone ringing, all the fires that have to be put out, and you can focus for 2 days on what to do next with your business, how to solve problems, how to take the business further. And you're in a room with people of like mind, all focused on the same thing. And there's a lot of magic in that. And then when you add to that in this case, the person on the stage has 50-plus years of experience, has worked with every conceivable kind of client from the smallest to the very largest, has interacted with some of the great marketers of all time, has helped a lot of great marketers come into being, writes copy every day, and there aren't a lot of people, ironically, who teach copy that do that anymore, writes copy every day, runs a business, is interacting with businesses and seeing their everyday problems. This is a great opportunity to get that time away and use it in a very productive way. I mean, it's amazing to me how many people will blow thousands of dollars on a vacation, you know, somewhat mundane vacation, nothing to write home about, who then will balk for, you know, at taking some time away to dig into their business. And it's very hard to work on your business when you're in the business and the phone's ringing and people are coming to you with problems and there's just, you know, all the things that you just have to take care of. You do really need, however you get it, time away where you're just sitting there as a blank page and somewhat starting from scratch. You know, okay, what are we doing? What are we trying to accomplish? What are our problems? What are we doing right? What can we do better? How can we do better? And spending 2 days with Drayton Bird, I can't imagine a better way to do that kind of focused thinking. And I have to emphasize, everybody, Drayton has not done a lot of these. He's taught a lot, but 2 days with Drayton is a very rare experience indeed. And he's saying that he's not going to do it again. I think like Gary Bensavenga, he's going to be true to his word. So if it's something that you want to do, now is the time. I'm going to give a website address for everybody. If people go to thesystemclub.com/invite/Drayton, that's DRAYTON, thesystemclub.com/invite/Drayton. I want to make an offer to everybody. I believe so strongly in this, and that if you can possibly make it. By the way, the pound is very low right now. It's an all-time low. You're going to get a. And you know what? It makes a difference.
Oh yeah,
it makes a difference. Everything's cheaper.
Tell me about it. I'm going to New York.
Yeah, right. So you have it going the other way, but. Yeah, for anybody spending something other than pounds, this is a great time to be in England. But anyway, and the seminar is going to be in Bristol, which I actually passed through once. It's a lovely place. But I want to offer, if you go to that link, thesystemclub.com/invite/Drayton, and you sign up for this, I will send you, and you have to contact me and let me know, and Drayton will confirm, I will send you my advanced copywriting and info marketing course, which I sell for $2,000, and I have never lowered the price on it ever, and I never will. I may raise the price someday. It's a very good course. You can read about it. You've probably heard about it. But anyway, I will send that to you as an encouragement to be part of this, because this, you're not going to get another chance like this, possibly in your lifetime. So if you're needing focus, if you want to take your business and do better with it, make more sales, run it smoothly, handle growth problems, but primarily get those sales and get your focus right, I strongly recommend this. So you can go to thesystemclub.com/invite/Drayton, and then when you sign up, contact me and tell me, hey, I'm signed up, and we will ship you this course, which will be a nice supplement to what you're going to be learning from Drayton. So, Drayton, I'm so glad you're doing this event, and I'm very glad for the people that have already signed up and are going to be there. I can guarantee it's going to be a business-changing, life-changing experience for the people that are there, and glad you're putting it on.
Well, thank you very much. I didn't know you were going to make that offer. That's amazing. The one thing I didn't say, I think the advantage, one advantage of this event would be, assuming you think it's worth it, worth talking to me, There's only going to be 100 people there maximum, so you will be able to talk to me, and you can ask me questions and get answers, and I'll probably listen to some appalling jokes in the process, but at least you'll be helped to make sure you don't make some of the ghastly mistakes I've made, and maybe enjoy one or two of the successes. Thanks very much, Ken.
My pleasure, and again, that web address is thesystemclub.com/invite/Drayton.